been a while since we last met. There's been a lot of interesting things that have taken place, and we're going to share many of those things tonight. Also, it looks like we may want and need a meeting in January, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. And it looks like we have everybody here other than Jeff and Robin. So thank you for being accommodating in terms of rescheduling from the Thursday that this meeting was originally planned to be held. We did have the Springfield Educational Fund kind of gala dinner taking place that same night, and there were some other conflicts. So again, I'm glad it worked out for everybody. So I'm going to go ahead and follow the meeting agenda, and before we get to the approval of the minutes, and if there's any comments from our public, you guys really aren't public at this point. But,
no comments. Yeah.
All right. So you have your meeting minutes of May the, has it been that long?
19th, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. May 19th in front of you. Kind of glance through them quickly if you haven't. And if everybody is comfortable with going ahead and approving these as submitted, and I've been told by Linda that they are actually correct, then I need a motion and we need to move ahead. Okay, Jim has moved. Any a second? Okay, Ted, any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Great. Okay, so Sustainable Cities, Courtney Griesel, and our representative from the University of Oregon. This is pretty cool stuff, guys. So, Courtney, I'm going to go ahead. Where is she?
Oh!
I was.
Oh, that's bad.
I am bad.
It's all right.
You made quite an impression.
Obviously, I was focusing on.
I guess, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, okay.
I'm going to invite Chris Jones up. Do you want to pull your hair up? We can scooch in.
Yeah.
So, the way that the program works is we applied as a city to be a partner with the University of Oregon for this academic year. And what we did was we identified a series of projects that are kind of already on the priority list for the city and some of the city's team Springfield partners. And we said, these are projects that are very important to us, but for funding reasons, they've actually been somewhat shelved because we've had an inability to sort of fund them or find funding for them or find staff to work on them. And so we applied with the university, and we put these projects in a list in that application and had university faculty look at those projects and say, are there matches on here where I could focus my course this year on this project and let those students have sort of this real-life partnership with a real-life project with citizens who are actually invested in the projects. And so, lo and behold, we were excited to have been chosen. It was a competitive process, and so that was very exciting. And we are now up to our necks in fall term, which has a series of projects, some that are pertinent to downtown, some that are more citywide. And the partnership will continue on through spring and then even into summer as we kind of fine-tune some of those final deliverables coming out of classes, and we begin to work with the partner city for next year, of assisting them. So what's exciting this year, especially for downtown, is we are looking very specifically at Booth Kelly. That is a site that's always been very important to the city for historical reasons, for fiscal reasons, and for future development reasons. And so this has given us an opportunity to have a total of three courses as well as a single master's student who's focusing their final thesis on it. Look at the site. There's an urban ecological design course that's going this fall. It's currently in progress. There is a terminal design studio, which is actually a fall, winter, and spring sequence. And so there will be the same 12 students moving through the course fall, winter, and spring. And then what we're calling an OLIS practicum, which is Oregon Leadership and Sustainability. It's a new certificate for the university. And there will be a total of 12 students, both winter and spring, focusing on the site, as well as a single student with that master's thesis. So they're talking about site plan, ways to look at the site from future development and design, as well as how to tie it into the ecology of the site, how to link it to the history of the site while still trying to be forward-thinking about how it can be modified and improved for future uses. Do you have anything to add on the Booth Kelly project?
I think you're good.
And you guys can jump in anytime you have questions. Chris is my counterpart at the university, so I manage all the projects moving forward right now, and we're close to 21 courses.
30 courses.
30 courses total. Yeah. And so there's a lot of, and they don't all relate. Some of them are carbon footprint inventories. Some of them are looking at park systems. Some of them are looking at new libraries, bike ped. It's just kind of all over the board. So at the university side, Chris is running around managing all the moving parts for Oregon. So we kind of lean on each other pretty heavily. Another project that's very exciting is the library. So we have engaged an architecture class that has the phenomenal opportunity of working with a gentleman named Tom Hilly, who's a renowned architect out of Seattle. He focuses very specifically, in the past, he's done so on schools, kind of written the how-to book on designing schools, and has now moved into libraries. So we have this opportunity to be sort of the first library that he uses as kind of a case study. I don't know that we might see ourselves wrapped into his work, but
you never know.
It could be kind of exciting. And so we have his students focusing this fall currently on designing a new library. He's working very closely with library staff for programming of it. And that site is located directly next door where the current First Christian Church, is it First Christian?
The parking lot.
Yeah, it's on the parking lot side. So the Central Lane Justice is the small building on North A, corner of North A and 5th. And so it's that half of the block leaving the church where it's currently located. It could also wrap slightly around to the back of the church's parking lot. We're kind of giving them some liberties to figure out what their design concepts are and what recommendations they might make. At the same time, we're acknowledging that that project is very exciting for downtown, but will require some communication and public outreach and some things to educate the public on what our intent is and to make sure that we're reaching out to them and getting their voice on the issue. And so we have a class, a strategic communication class, currently working on the project to figure out how to communicate the issue and how to market the issue and talk about it with the public. So there's 20 students in that course. Any thoughts on the library?
Could I just ask a question more on a macro basis? So does everybody have, you should have in front of you, the Sustainable City Year Program at the University of Oregon, written by Chris?
The Planner's Journal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have a one-page description that I can hand around.
So the SCI, which is Sustainable Cities Initiative, 25 courses, 10 disciplines. So could you give us, you know, more of, you know, the overview as to how this actually got started? Then the second thing is what kind of outcomes have occurred in the city of Salem? Yeah. And the third is what are you trying to do specifically as far as the Booth Kelly property?
Do you want me to finish with the list of downtown projects first and then kind of get into that, or do you want to take a
break? Well, I'd just like to, since Chris is here and we've got this in front of us, I just really want to understand what this is all about.
Why don't you nut and bolt?
Yeah, we'll go down.
That sounds great. I would love to answer all those questions.
Okay.
So this idea, the idea is that we match up academic courses, advanced academic courses in which students do project work with real projects in a real city, and we do it at a very large scale, so that we have 400 or 500 students each year in 30 different courses across a dozen disciplines involved in working with city staff and other partners on real projects. And what that does is it allows us to, I'm coming around to your first question, it allows us to apply lots of different disciplines to problems, because real problems and real issues in cities are by definition multidisciplinary. You have to have all sorts of angles on the problem. So the way it got started is two planning professors and an architecture professor at the university decided that they wanted to try to do something at a larger scale. Often classes in the past have been partnered with cities, but it's usually, you know, one class, they call up a city and say, hey, you know, we're thinking about doing a project, here's what the students are going to be doing, do you have anything that we could work on? So that they didn't have to work on something that was just made up, hypothetical. these professors thought, well, what if we got together with the city and the city came up with a list of 3 or 4 projects and we could match up 6 courses and really throw a lot of energy? You know, that would be really big. So they called up UVO alumnus Eric Kvarsten, who's the city manager in Gresham, and pitched this idea to him, and he thought it sounded like a good idea. And the city staff and the folks in Gresham got so excited about the idea that it went from they couldn't control themselves and stop it, 6 courses. It ended up being something like 15 or 18 courses by the end of the year. Everybody got really excited about what the students were able to do. And at the end of the year, the city manager said, you know, even if we didn't have all of these ideas and concepts and recommendations from students, just the energy that you provided to my city staff has been worth all of the effort that it took to coordinate this program. He said his city staff were just changed. They really relished coming to work in the morning and, you know, getting to work on these real projects because the students brought all this energy and enthusiasm. So that kind of reaction made us think, well, we could really do this. So we had an application process the next year, and Salem was one of the cities that applied. They had the strongest application. So we worked with them last year, and we scaled it up even more. We had 30 courses working on 15 different projects, again, across 10 disciplines at the university. Everything from architecture to journalism to business to law, just across the spectrum. And some of the results in Salem have been outstanding. I had a call the other day with my counterpart in Salem who coordinated all the city effort, and she was just rattling off all of the different projects that the city is now following up on. There were a couple articles in the Salem Statesman Journal detailing some of the ways in which student work was being moved forward to advance real city goals, like city staff engagement, a better engagement with neighborhood associations, better engagement with the Latino community, designs for a new police station and public safety facility. The city manager has said, you know, we moved them like 2 years forward on that project compared to where they would have been. And the same is the case with a number of different projects. So the student ideas really help create conversations around public conversations around projects that are tied to city council goals and that are really important to the city, but the city just doesn't have the resources to address at the scale that the students can address them. So my counterpart at the City of Salem told me that there are whole units within the city that now feel like they're just an extension of the Sustainable City Year, that they've taken on all these projects that were not just made up projects for the Sustainable City Year program, that were real city goals, you know, tied to, as they are in Springfield, the city's strategic plans. And so the energy and the forward motion that the students gave to these projects just push them that much farther along. So your third part was about Booth Kelly specifically.
Right.
The students, John Tamulonis came to visit with the students last week and gave them a real good, they've been working all term, but gave them a real good sort of history of what's happened there in the past and what some of the expectations are for the future. And the city right now is giving them a pretty wide latitude to explore possibilities. And the students work generally within the realm of reality. They like to push the, you know, they like to redefine what reality is sometimes a little bit. But they're not going to be proposing 25-story buildings on the Booth Kelly site, and, you know, they're not going to be going crazy. But the students are looking at different concepts for what might happen in the existing buildings, both in the short term and the long term. What might happen if you took away some of the buildings and did something new? Integrating the site with the mill race restoration that's happening, which we know is very important to the city. Exploring the ways that the site can connect to downtown, which is of course very important, but also a big challenge because of the railroad tracks and the limited access. So the students are really engaging with all of these issues. Later on in the year, there will be students looking at sort of taking some of these concepts and doing some basic financial modeling and economic analysis to see, well, if this design was to be developed, how would that pan out financially? You know, would it be better than what's happening now? How would it be different? How long would it take to recoup some kind of investment? So they're exploring all of those issues, and as I said, from a variety of disciplines. We've got architecture, these new Oregon Leadership and Sustainability students, we have landscape architecture, and so it's coming from all directions.
Okay.
It's pretty exciting.
Cool, thank you. Questions? Dan?
I just want to answer
yes.
Courtney's question, and it's about the library. So I think everybody here knows the site that Courtney just described. You know, if we just kind of think like a student and not and try to throw everything possible into that site that might be complementary, Silva Chambers owns a piece of property adjacent to that. I think there's an opportunity. You know, the Chamber is looking for not a new home, but another home for the business part of it. El Rapa is looking for a site. If we could talk, and I think a private-public partnership there to create kind of a civic center, mass some civic uses there with some commercial or retail on a bottom floor kind of thing with guaranteed leases so that the builder, the private developer, could have some confidence for 10 years. Right now it's a little tough thing, but we all hang together, that you could, from the Justice Center to that next block would all be a civic kind of block, and then NETCO would do the food thing, and then you'd come up to the City Hall, and you would have a destination for so many things. Mm-hmm. The library is the number one attractor in mm-hmm. downtown, just by numbers, and it would support, I think, a pretty healthy retail center there. So I think there's a lot of organizations like the Chamber who would listen to something like that. If we built a 2 or 3 story office building, would you be interested in locating there? We would take a serious look at that, as long as there were other things that were going there, mm-hmm. not just a single building, which I think would be actually a shame to just have a library building, period. You need to kind of parlay its assets to attract people into something on the private sector side, too.
And I think if I just speak to it a little bit, when we outlined the project originally, we said we have some expectations that there would be some mixed uses maybe on the ground floor and some other uses within it. And then what we realized after talking with the professor, he's just here as an adjunct. He actually works in reality, which is also very nice. But he kind of had this step back moment of, why don't you let us what we think from learned experience or from the amount of research that we will do, what we think a good mix is for the type of library and the size of city, because they're looking at actually the entire service area.
Mm-hmm.
And what those complementary uses really are or are not. And so we did learn that maybe putting food on the ground floor doesn't make sense for a library. Maybe it needs to be other social services, or maybe it needs to be in a complementary building next door. And so what's exciting about it is kind of they're pushing our limits of what we know, because that's what they did. They went out and did a whole bunch of reconnaissance, and so it's very exciting.
I think it would be an opportunity to engage a real developer with a key piece of property that's all barren right now,
mm-hmm.
and just say, if this, then what?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
what would it take for the Chambers family to develop that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you have an expert there, but I would feel like being engaged, you have all those folks, you know, music stores, you have books, so there's a bunch of things that complement that. You know, and but anyway, I just think that there's a real opportunity to do more than one thing, to do several
mm-hmm.
things,
mm-hmm.
and it could make, you know, this center where we're sitting right now really different than it is today.
So one of the neat things about engaging students is that it can be a little different from engaging a consultant, in that it's a relatively low risk endeavor. I mean, first of all, if some of the work is going to be really outside the box, and when you display that work, you can say, And we've encouraged cities to do this. You can say, look at all this student work. You know, what do you think of it? And if people think that some of it is crazy, well, then you can say, well, that's student work. No problem. It's crazy, right? They're students. But if people like it, then you can take all the credit for it. You know, you can say, great, we love this too. What do we do next? So the other piece is that there are 17 students in this architecture studio. Each one is developing an individual concept. And so the city will end up with 17 developed individual concepts. Some of them have mixed uses. Some of them are library only. Most of them incorporate some kind of additional outdoor public space, or, you know, semi-outdoor public space. And what the city will be able to do is take those concepts, which are generated, as I said, relatively low risk, and pick out pieces and parts that you like. If you think, okay, that's a great library, what happens if we add on another floor or add on another wing that's your commercial space or your, you know, semi-civic space? All those things are possible because it's really at the conceptual stage. What these designs will enable the library to do is to really take that next step in thinking about what needs to happen next to develop to raise money, to talk to citizens, to raise support for a new public library. They'll have wonderful drawings and renderings and beautiful things to show people. To
say, models.
And models, that's right, to say, this is what's possible, right? Mm-hmm. And not just sort of talk hypothetically about a new library, which is a lot harder for people to imagine.
Annie?
I'm sorry to make you guys toggle between the library and Booth Kelly, but when you guys get to a point where you have some either crazy or not so crazy student ideas to share about Booth Kelly, I would love to hear concretely what some of those are.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll probably advertise those windows. Like when we, right now is the first exhibition that we're working to plan, and that's for the library. And those will be the first products that we, at least so far, have been kind of notified that they're getting ready to schedule time for viewing. So we'll kind of do that similar when we start to, when faculty's ready to start scheduling things, we'll get that calendar to you guys so that you have that ability to drop in, or if we have room on review panels, we can open it up.
Many of the reviews and presentations are, the public is welcome. Mm-hmm. I mean, often the public doesn't come because either they don't know about it or they're not invited, but we make special effort in these cities to make sure that the word gets out. The Booth Kelly site specifically, you won't be seeing well-developed concepts until the end of next term, so about late February, March, just because of the way that the academic calendar is progressing. But you will see then and also in May some really great stuff, and we will definitely invite people to come.
One more question from Shannon, then let's let Courtney close up.
I decided they said so well that I'd be babbling.
Okay. Courtney, do you want to?
Sure. So there are several other projects moving forward with downtown. Chris has a handout. We're going to be looking at wayfinding in winter and spring. So there won't be any products out of that, obviously, this term, since it won't start up till winter. We're 95% certain we'll be looking at wayfinding.
Yep.
And then we'll also be doing some feasibility studies on density as well as LEED incentives. So we'd expect some feasibility, some recommendations, some ways to make things pencil out. Also not till winter and spring. So a lot of these courses are kind of kicking off a little later for downtown. A lot of other projects. We didn't load it. The partnership exceptionally heavy with downtown. Downtown makes up about a third of the entire partnership. And part of that was because we recognized the work that this committee and then resulting staff have done has been quite extensive. And we're actually, in a lot of cases, past the point of conceptual ideas. We're kind of into the get or done and analysis and really looking for specific policy. So we didn't want it to feel like downtown got left out. It was more that we're not quite in the idea generating phase anymore. You guys pretty much did that for us with the downtown plan and then projects that resulted after. So that's really the nuts and bolts of SCY, and I'll be happy to keep in touch with Linda if you guys want me to come back and give you updates, and then I'll make sure she gets calendars of review opportunities and exhibition opportunities.
Thanks, Courtney.
Yeah.
So designs, Yes.
Is there any sort of healthy website where we could just go independently and get updates or podcasts put out or any sort of things like that?
The Sustainable Cities Initiative website has a list of all the projects. Mm-hmm. There should be on there, I'll leave a couple of my cards. There should be on there a way to get onto our mailing list, but I actually don't know for sure whether there is. Okay. But I'll leave my card, and if you want to get on our mailing list, you can just email me, and we'll make sure to send out information that way.
And then it's kind of my goal. I lost an intern, and I'm now about a month away from the new intern coming in, so there's been a gap. So my project for next week is to have our web page sort of up and prettier than it currently is. It's not very pretty. So once that gets up, I'll send the link to Linda so that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Linda, downtown Charette. What are we talking about, Jenny Rogers?
Yeah, and Jenny didn't come, so I was hoping she was going to give us. Do you have any information on that, Claire?
Ted does.
Ted, Ted. It's happening this Saturday. Yeah. At what time?
9:30.
Oh, good, you've got flyers.
At A3, I don't have flyers. Yeah, okay. What I have is actually the report that they put out. You could pass around this.
I could run and make copies during one of the other talks.
Okay.
Or people can just jot it down.
Let's see. So Design Spring is the group of intern architects in the area. It includes landscape architecture interns as well. And late last spring, they decided they wanted to do a charrette, and we pitched the idea of downtown to them. That's what they selected to do. So for the past, I'd say, 2 or 2.5 months, they have been running around in earnest talking to just about everyone who will give them 45 minutes to an hour and a half, and there are some victims here at this table of that, and they have coalesced all of that information into the preliminary report for the charrette, and then they have been beating the streets trying to get people ready to come to the charrette, and the culmination of all those efforts, I think they're thinking they'll have about 20 or 25 people there for the charrette. They're going to have 5 or 6 architects in there as facilitators to help keep everyone on track. The focus is on Main Street proper, mostly facades rather than infrastructure improvements and any of those sorts of things. Again, they tried to fit in with all the ongoing efforts that are going on. And it's a 3-hour hitch, and what they're going to do is gather a lot of information, run through some scenarios, come up with options for, I'm presuming, business owners and building owners. Mm-hmm. And there'll be some closure at the end of the charrette itself, but really what they do then is then they take all that information offline afterwards, and 2 or 3 weeks later they'll put out a final report and obviously make it available to all the participants and any other interested communities.
What's the official definition of charrette?
Charrette's a French term, which I think means something like get it on the wagon.
A cart full of drawings.
Yeah, so the idea is, or the official definition is, a project is dropped on a group of people and they're given a limited amount of time to solve it. And at the end of that time, the cart goes. And so whatever you've done, you better get on that cart, or at the L'École des Beaux-Arts, it's not going to get reviewed. It gets taken to the teacher.
So when is it going to be?
This Saturday at 9:30 at A3. And they can be very powerful information gathering experiences. And with the right direction, you can really come up with some very useful information for people who are trying to do things.
Question.
So, yes.
9:30 is the start time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people aren't going to be able to make that. Is that a drop-in?
Oh, absolutely. You could come at any time, and I think I got this question the other day at the NEDCO Downtown Design Meeting. You can come at any time. The first part of it, most of the preliminary information and sort of the rules of the game, if you will be laid out. So if you miss the first part, it'll take you a little while to sort of integrate and find your place. If, on the other hand, you can make the first part and you can't make the last part, you'll probably end up being a little frustrated, because when the information all starts to come together in about the last 45 minutes, and you actually start to see the results of what all the different tables have worked on. So
what is the end time?
In time, 12:30.
So. Let me ask the question. Can anybody here attend?
Well, Denise and I are attending. And
Shannon? Jim?
Jim. Ted's going to Ted be there.
Because I'm going to be on a plane, so I'm not going to be around. But I think it'd be really important to try to get as much representation as we possibly can.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. And I was talking with John a little bit earlier, John Tuttle, the everyone's perspective ends up finding a place to fit. And the more perspectives that come in to the process, the better the results are. It's really
pretty cool. So.
It's a great resource for the property owner. Oh. The packet that they're going to get at the end of this, the preliminary report alone is really nice. So we'll make sure that I send that out to you as soon as that gets finalized. And the neat thing about it is they're not just looking at individual buildings. They're looking at blocks. And the photographs and the drawings, really nice. Wow. Really nice work.
And give the rest of us, you know, kind of that visual preliminary idea of what can happen.
I think it's just a PDF that got mailed
around. Yeah. But I could find it.
Well, I think Linda's saying she'll
Yeah, and that was just a draft. I know they had some changes they wanted to make to it.
Would it be important to actually read that before one goes? Not necessarily.
So how many professionals have participated in, you know, the design and the, you know, the energy behind this?
A few. So Jenny works at Roberts and Sherwood Architects, and Natalie isn't employed in an office right now, I think. So Jenny has at her disposal some resources within her main office. She also is connected to other offices where she's worked in the past. So she's also, she and Natalie are both quite aggressive people. So they've gone around and they've knocked on a lot of doors, and they've spoken to a lot of architects directly about this. Maybe the shortest way to answer your question, that the chair of the local AIA chapter is going to be one of the facilitators there. So, you know, they've reached up into every nook and cranny to find people who can be there that they can. That being said, it's an intern effort. So when I was volunteering other professionals to assist them, I told those professionals, look, I will protect you. I'm not going to get you into a case where you have to spend 4 weeks on. So it's going to be intern driven, but I think there are going to be some pretty good heads at the tables, to be quite honest.
And the AIA is a sponsor.
Absolutely.
So Dan, is somebody from the chamber? Can somebody from the chamber be there?
I've already spent like 2 hours with these ladies, and
I
can't.
I've met them before. Do they specialize in low income housing projects? There's a couple of architects over in Eugene that.
You might be thinking of Ann Delaney.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Yeah.
No, Natalie's a student.
Mm-hmm. They're great. I like their spirit because, I mean, I really think if you start at a departure point of what's possible, but a charrette is really who's ever in the room. You got to start with an understanding, and I'm not available this Saturday, but we've had a couple of charrettes downtown, and each of these efforts moves people a little further along. Mm-hmm. So. It's good to have folks who don't see a lot of limitations.
Right.
Yeah, so you're going to see a lot of pretty pictures out of this. And I like the block-by-block concept because people are not building by building necessarily. It is a block-by-block kind of thing, so it's good.
Wonderful. Okay, thanks, Ted. Sure. Courtney, do you want to go ahead on the other downtown items of the discussion here?
Absolutely. I'll start with parking. I'm going to pass this around both sides of the table. I'm going to save one for me. So we came and spoke with you much earlier this year about parking and specifically enforcement of parking downtown and the entire project that makes up, which is a mix of construction, it's a mix of policy, code revisions, enforcement, the either mix of an interior component to a private firm on the outside for the enforcement piece. And initially, we had thought we'd be enforcing by now, but as things seemed to go, we came across a couple bumps, some including lead that exists in paint, so there were some physical bumps which takes a little bit more time. And when we started throwing the word lead around, we got all kinds of hazmat flags and things that come up of that nature that we just want to make sure we handle very responsibly and very efficiently. And so part of that construction was we didn't want to drill into a piece of it and not abate all of it. And so we want to be prepared for that. And we typically like to do that when it's a tiny bit drier. So construction's holding off. It'll be done still by this fiscal year, which means June. But my hope is that we are out with construction beginning probably in March and giving the contractor a little bit longer window so that he can hire those subcontractors that need to do some of that abatement work. Signage is all created and done and sitting and waiting in the sign shops, so that's exciting. The other part that we are handling with a little bit more finesse is some of the relationships that are made uncomfortable by enforcement, some of that being with staff and businesses downtown. So it's having conversations about what their concerns are. Right now, I have been spending the last 2 months visiting staff meetings and giving them a staff presentation, and I'll do it for out. I've done it for a couple businesses also, talking about kind of the what does this mean for you. And so it gets down into the very nuts and bolts of literally what does this mean for you in your pocket. Your pocketbook, but it's been good conversations, and we normally walk away at the end with kind of that understanding of nobody likes parking enforcement, but nobody can quite say that it's not a good thing as a larger picture. So what we agreed when I sat down with our city manager and said, look, we have construction problems and we're having a lot of anxiety, was that it may not actually be a bad thing to begin enforcement late spring, early summer, when the days are longer and people are walking to their cars maybe at greater distances than they might have been in winter when we originally planned to start enforcement. So it feels a little bit disappointing to me to be pushing the project out, but at the same time, I think we're going to have some happier partners in the project to do it. So it's not ending, it's not going away, it just is finding a better go window.
Okay. The parking committee that preceded what you're talking about now, will it have a role in the future?
There will be a parking advisory committee. We'll probably go out. It won't be the same junior parking attendants, because I know a lot of you are junior parking attendants, I believe. It won't necessarily be the same exact makeup. You would be eligible to apply for it. And so that committee will continue probably to be formed as Linda works through some code language and things like that. But for the long term, when there's a committee that meets regularly to review citizen concerns or complaints, that will be a different committee that you would apply for to be on, and one that probably rotates a little bit more frequently for membership.
What's still in my head from that is Rick Williams. I remember his dialogue almost verbatim from day one all the way through. It was one thing leads to another, to finalization of bringing all the different pieces together and sort of like working a puzzle, but it makes sense what he put on the table.
Totally
makes sense.
I am happy to be working in his shadow. I appreciate everything he's done. He's been a lot of help.
To finish is that his recommendations about the future as to how to proceed with citizen input through a parking advisory committee is well documented in his thoughts, and I think they're very appropriate. So I want to put a pitch for that as far as that's
so concerned. So I want to make sure I'm not misunderstood, that there will be a parking advisory committee that will convene from the minute tickets are enforced, from the first ticket on a window, there will be a parking advisory committee available to make complaints to or give kudos to or make suggestions to.
No, the key in that was a parking head, a position created.
A parking manager.
Yes, a parking manager. Mm-hmm. And the parking committee then would be advisory to that person.
Right, that's correct.
And that's on the drawing board?
Yeah, so the parking manager will probably look, no matter what, there will always be a parking manager at the city. And if that it means that they just are a contract manager, and actually what they do is manage the contract with the entity that's fully enforcing, then that might be how that is. If it's a joint combination where we have an entity doing enforcement, but they report to a parking manager who's a city employee, it could look like that. But either way, there will be a city staff person who's responsible for some part of the relationship, and then there will be a parking manager who handles day-to-day engagement with enforcement staff and then reports to that advisory committee. What is not right now defined is whether that's the same person or two different people who work hand in hand.
Part of the concept that with the parking committee, the advisory committee, was that they would interact with the public and hear their input, be they positive or negative, either way, and then correlate it, and then look for the key factors that would trigger different sections of improvement and changes. So it seemed like Rick was proposing that format, that the steady part of it would land in the lap of the advisory committee to do the footwork on it and then advise the manager when those trigger points were reached. Does that seem in the concept? Or?
Sure.
Any other questions on parking before we go to the access and circulation?
I have one. I mean, I didn't spend 1 minute on this committee. And what I can't tell from reading this, Courtney, and I'm sure this makes a whole lot of sense to Jim and other people, what are we talking about? Asbestos? Are there going to be parking meters? I mean,
no parking meters.
What is?
Were you not here for my big, long presentation?
I think Bob was talking to me the whole time.
No parking meters. We're literally talking about a facelift, so that you're not getting confusing messages. Right now, the signage is a little bit contradictory. Mm-hmm. And then we're also talking about actual enforcement of the current posted time stays.
Okay.
So.
Asbestos.
Lead.
Lead.
On the yellow paint.
On the paint on the curb.
Had to be there.
They actually get concerned when it's flaking off right now. They get concerned when that goes into the waterways.
Because we all do that.
So that's really old paint. Pre-74.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about the circulation.
Sure. I have a PowerPoint for that one.
Okay.
I also have a handout that I'm going to circulate.
The only reason why I can relate to that subject is because we're full of lead on toys, so it's really
right. Yes.
Those are valuable toys.
Kids shouldn't have toys.
Just don't let your kids chew on them.
No.
If you suck on a toy for 3 hours, you might get poisoned.
You never know what happens.
You might get
poisoned. You might get poisoned if you suck it on it for 3 hours.
Yeah, they got it.
None of my toys have
it. We need one more.
That's where I started.
How do they remove it?
They used to have paint that would glitter. And they paint on the inside. It was lead paint, but it was, they threw stuff in there that was really another chemical back in the 16th century. It would be green. I mean, it's incredible what kind of chemicals they put in. So you turn off the lights, it's so low. Literally. A big bomb.
As part of the work that was done by this committee and staff for the downtown plan, the project that was identified was a very important one, downtown access and circulation. Specifically, Crandall made kind of a recommendation that we should be looking at whether or not Main and South Bay should continue as one-way streets with a couplet, as opposed to going to two-way, which would require a conversion. So staff, we formed a three-person team. It consists of myself and then a bit of a project management role, partnered with Christy Krueger, who's one of our engineering, our transportation engineers, and then Mark Metzger, who does a significant amount of community outreach on projects and is a planner. And we kicked this project off earlier this summer. We engaged Kittleson and Associates, who had already been engaged in some conversations and work with the downtown plan. And we started moving forward with a basic engineering analysis of downtown and access and circulation. And this was a little bit different than our normal engineering analysis. It's something that is important. It's been included in a public process, and we kind of wanted to make sure that we sort of keep public, the Citizen Advisory Committee, as well as Council and Planning Commission, up at a little bit higher rate as we move forward on it, because it is such a touchy subject, and it's one that staff kind of has rise to the top in conversations about development and redevelopment for downtown. Sorry, this the little clicker doesn't work. So here's another one of those timelines. We are currently at this location on the timeline. We've started doing sort of the 101, the background on the project. We've been gathering old plans. We've been sort of gathering the not normal stakeholders for it, users of the facility, and then sort of doing the draft problem statements and evaluation criteria, some of the background stuff. And now we're at the point where we're actually starting to move forward into the public engagement component. And we're receiving our very first round of input from interviewees. So we had this exciting process where Kittleson got a list of users of the facility, that's what they called them. So freight was on the list, downtown restaurants and business owners. We had some industrial uses on the list, some professionals. I think we have a couple people in the room who actually were interviewed. And some nonprofit representatives, just an entire smattering of people that use the facility and also depend on it for their viability. And Kittleson sat down with them and interviewed them with a series of questions. You have the draft questions in front of you right now. Those questions were used as a framework for a larger conversation. So there were times when not all questions were asked, or sometimes when a question would sort of come out of a conversation that was occurring, just to sort of keep the dialogue moving. Where you see the diamonds are all of the stakeholders we engaged in the interview process to try and make sure that we were getting a large breadth of downtown, and then a very large set of users. There were some, everything from a pediatrics clinic to automotive shops, just about every category we could think of. And most of these people were not folks that had been involved in processes with us before, which was not necessarily good or bad. It just made sure that we were sort of expanding the process outside of what we know. And because of that, we got some feedback that was a little bit different than things that we've heard, and it was a good thing. What we found, one thing that we heard, was that people define downtown, within this stakeholder group, people define downtown from Mill to 7th, and then as far north as A and south, as South A. So what was interesting was that's pretty much it. That's how they define downtown, which is pretty darn small, smaller than we were thinking. There was a really small percentage of the people that actually bumped it out to 14th, which tends to be, in my mind, a little bit closer to what I think of, but we asked the interviews, here's some of just the summary. We asked them about how they use it. How does it directly affect their business? Do they rely on it? Does it matter? Are people driving by and they just happen to stop in? Or are they driving to their location as a destination? We asked them what they thought the issues were, and from their perception. We got into asking them how exactly they would describe the environment. Safe, unsafe, noisy, a mix. And then we got into some detailed questions about freight. And I know some of you, or is anybody, Karen or Ted, are you at all comfortable talking about how your interview process went or your thoughts? And you can be candid, because it's actually the first time I will have heard.
I thought it went fine. one of the things, I haven't really asked anybody, but one of the things that I wondered if this was going on was that there was some thinking on the city's part that the Crandall Arambula proposal was actually too ambitious, and that this consulting effort might be an attempt to try to do something a little less ambitious that achieves some percentage of the same goals of what Crandall Arambula took on. and that wasn't maybe part of the focus of this information gathering that Wilson was doing. So that's an open question in my mind.
I think I understand. Is the question, were we using this process as, well, what we are using the process for is when we have an idea, kind of the next step to secure funding for it and to put it in that priority list is to actually do the detailed sort of mathematical analysis of if it's feasible and have somebody in a very detailed way look at traffic counts and turning radiuses and right-of-ways and kind of those components. We don't normally do this type of stakeholder interview and public engagement with a normal traffic analysis, which is why it's a little odd. It's a little different. So it happens about every project. We normally do this level of analysis on things, and that's just to make sure we're being responsible when we start going out for as-built or when we put on priority property acquisition and things. That's really the goal of the project right now. The project team, we did sit down at the table, though. What we did say was that Crandall identified a two-way conversion as something they thought was probably the best way to fix this. And we said, okay, we understand that. What we thought might be a better way is to put that out there and then actually let the transportation specialists say, it's this with a mix of this, or it's not this, it's this. And what we really said is we don't really know because that's not what we do. And it's a big issue. So maybe what we can do is say it's two-way conversion is what we think it is. And the interviews are saying we think it's that because of this reason, safety, noise, you know, whatever they are. And then actually maybe this analysis can drill down to those are the perceptions of what the problem is. And this alternative gets at all of these, whereas this one only gets at three. Or it's truly just a nuts and bolts analysis. And we're trying to do it without any preconceived expectations for what's right or what's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very, very useful hour. I presume you felt the same way.
Yeah, we got into a lot more than I thought it was going to be, mostly concerning the two-way, and so many of the questions had to do with a lot of things that we had studied with, gone over with Crandall.
Yeah.
And so so I felt pretty qualified to be able to answer those because of that study. And then also as someone right there on the street, you know, I think that they, I know there were several other people that also have mm-hmm. businesses right on Main Street, and so we're right there. I mean, it's kind of, you know, the theater. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to really give an opinion about safety concerns and about pedestrians, and so it was really, they asked very pointed questions.
They did.
Yeah.
You know, and they worked really hard with us. We drafted a set. And then we sort of gave it to them and said, we don't want there to be a slant on these that we don't even realize exists. So they tweaked them, and then they added questions in from other projects that they've done. Then I know they met with Click. They met, didn't it? Yep. Yeah, so if there's anything, you know, we're also really open for if there's some kind of criticism of how it went. We want to know that, too, since we strategically were not involved in the interviewing. No city staff, at least. We didn't sit in there to any of the interviews. So, you can contact me if you want to. So, there was a couple reasons to visit downtown that were kind of felt throughout the groups and different themes, and not everybody felt this way about all of them, but
just real quick, like on the conversion, do you feel that that's the positive influence that you saw for moving forward, or is it something that is of great concern?
Which?
The two-way on me.
Is two-way a positive influence?
For creation, or is there concern?
We're not at a point yet to tell. The project will probably take until late spring to have kind of that final recommendation from the consultants, and since I pretty much do development analyst work, I can I don't want to kind of move into a breath. That's why we hired Kielsen. He'll tell us whether or not it's good or bad. We think, regardless of, you know, that, we think that it's something that merits high quality analysis and staff time. And that's really where we're at with it right now, is making sure we get the right answers and we do a really good job so that if the issue comes up in the future, we can either say, yes, this is our goal, or our goal has changed slightly. It's a combination of this and something else. Or
do you feel enough enthusiasm in the responses you got, and you're seeing that as a probability for success?
Well, we'll look at the responses. I've got a couple of them up here.
Yeah, let's move through it, because there's a lot more here that we need to review.
Yeah, so these were some of the reasons. Pay bills, for some reason I thought that was kind of funny. LTD, which is a very positive thing, because that means that there were a significant amount of people that found value in LTD downtown. There were some common themes, so this is kind of getting into what we heard. They acknowledged, while they didn't necessarily, a large population of people didn't necessarily say that they felt unsafe as pedestrians because of traffic. They said that they felt unsafe as pedestrians because of the surrounding environment, not related to traffic, which was interesting. They definitely identified those safety for cyclists when it was related to freight. And here's the thing, having an analysis background, this is such a tiny sample that none of this actually is like mathematically. 20 people. But they felt that there was actually ample parking. Their irritation, or what they felt was lacking, was enforcement. So that's one that we're working on right now. They didn't perceive speed to be a problem, which our traffic engineers actually say that speed isn't a problem as well. So it's a little bit, we did talk about the ability though to cue lights to still slow it down even a couple more miles an hour, and that might just be enough to sort of bring everybody to the table and okay with that issue. They relatively uniformly identified EDCO as a positive downtown.
Yay!
That was just you.
One statement. That's good, wow. Though, Claire.
What they did say is that they feel unsafe on South A. In pretty much all modes, they feel unsafe on South A.
It's fast.
Yeah. There were some plans, some concerns about the downtown plan expressed. Too aspirational was one of them. Perception that it's just another plan, which is less of this group's issue and more of something that the city battles with and that we're trying to change by implementing the things that you guys have identified. This one seemed a little odd to me. We're always trying to balance how fluid our plans are and how quick they are to respond. And some of the interviewees actually said if they're that fluid and that quick to respond, there's nothing consistent that we can count on. And so it just needs to be nailed down so we know what to expect at all times. Just some responses. None of these are good or bad. They're just responses. They really felt that economic development needed to be the thing that was a priority. And it was specifically stated that in all reality, they didn't quite see, in some cases, why circulation was rising to the top on that. And what we also kind of made a point with this interviews and the consultant we talked about when we went round and round on was that this wasn't our time to preach to them and bring them to our side. This was a time to let them feel comfortable and confident that they could say what they felt and that they weren't going to have us persuade them otherwise. Some things that they identified were concern over lighting, especially pedestrian level. System development charge costs and a lack of incentives, which John's working on. Partnerships between private and public needing to be a very important thing. It wasn't necessarily said that there was a lack thereof or a lot. It was just said that they felt like partnerships were important for economic development. And that really it needed to be a catalytic private development project. That should be our first priority. There was some talk within the comments about improving downtown charm. We sort of got into that. And they also acknowledged that not just on Main Street, but looking on the north to south streets. And this got into where they said they felt unsafe because of typically the business to their side as opposed to the traffic on the other side. They also felt that it's a downfall for downtown, that a lot of our property owners don't seem committed to either investing in the property or investing in their own businesses. They identified needs to connect downtown to the Washburn Historic District. They felt that maybe we ought to be looking at North A as our pedestrian street. They were concerned that if we did this type of construction project, that the amount of time it would take to complete it would cripple some of the businesses that currently exist downtown. One of them had mentioned, we meet with Kittleson on the 18th to get down to the real nuts and bolts of the quick summary they gave staff, is numbers. I always want to know what percentage said that, you know, how many out of 15? And one of the questions was, one of them felt that they had read within the plan that Crandall had made a comment about that conversion could actually drop traffic levels on Main Street below a healthy rate. So while I couldn't necessarily find that statement in the plan, it's something that's a perception that we'll want to make sure we address. The safety concerns around freight in the quick summary were expressed not to exist. And that it was a relative mix against or for a conversion. And their biggest, a lot of the big concerns were that they were concerned about what that would do to South Bay, that it might be good for Main Street, but at the sake of South Bay. So what's interesting about all those comments is if you read the questions, we tried to make them relatively traffic concentric, acknowledging that traffic is a social, it's how we use it socially, it's how we perceive it. And what we heard from Kittleson just over the phone very quickly when they sent off the summary was that the conversations kept coming back around to social issues, to very social issues, just not traffic specific issues. It's issues of perception and trying to replan what had already been planned and a lot of rehashing through a lot of the work you guys have already done. And so we have to acknowledge that part of that's because we reached out to a broader group of stakeholders that weren't involved in your process, and so they just don't innately know. And what we have that's very great is we have all the work that you've done to sort of help us support the decisions that we're committed to moving forward. So some of them have great ideas, but you've already sort of fleshed that out or vetted it through your process, and that's how that is, and that's fine. We're not anticipating reopening up the book and re-editing that plan. That's not at all what this is about. We did find it interesting, though, that so many of the concerns that rose to the top were a little bit more socially driven, a little bit more about safety of businesses and how we act downtown, not just specific to how we drive downtown. So we'll be going to council on December 5th. 30-minute work session. We'll have a little bit more information when we go to council, just because we'll have had our meeting with Kittleson. It will be a day-long kind of sit down at the table and hash things out. And we'll have identified some next steps. We have tentative next steps, and that's mainly, pardon the clicking here, that's mainly because we have a timeline that we're trying to stick to, but right now they're pretty darn bulky. But that's partly why this shows a 6-month timeline. We've actually given it about 9 months, so there's an extra 3-month buffer because we're anticipating that as we run into it, we don't always know what we're going to run up against, and so we have to be prepared to analyze maybe a couple more options than we originally thought, or even fewer, so it could wrap up quicker. But any questions on the project? Shannon?
It's more of a kind of an input. There's always going to be people, and I've heard them too, about the conversion issue. The problem with that huge error, I feel, in my opinion, is that just because you see a number of high traffic going through your town doesn't mean that they're going to lose a potential shopper if they move to South Bay. What I mean by that is I've counted in Gateway Mall, which is about a percentage because of my store, the number of people that have a bag in their hand in the Gateway Mall is 1 in every 120 people. In the Valley River Center, it's 1 in every 20 people. Now, we have to say, well, though if you look at a Saturday, you see a high traffic amount of people. A Saturday, there are a lot of people, but still, there's only one in every 120 that has a bag in their hand. Mm-hmm. So they're more loiterers. When you're dealing with downtown Springfield, you have all those cars that are going to Eugene, going to whatever they're needing to do, high traffic. They move to South Bay, people are saying, well, I lost the potential sale. Those guys weren't going to your spot in the first place. The healthiness is going to be those that are taken seriously that won't be deterred according to the shops.
Well, and I guess the thing I didn't do a very good job of explaining is we're looking at this project as kind of two-part. This being really part one, which is sort of the puzzle pieces, is it feasible?
Right.
And is it, you know, what's it going to cost us and what's that going to look like as far as our means for construction and things? And does it get at the perceptions? You know, what combinations get at the public's perception of downtown? So that's kind of one piece. The project that follows this, which is typically the first public project that we see in other types of projects, is where we start engaging that public and saying, okay, here are the two, three options, because we flushed all the others out in this space. Here they are, and here's what they get after by the consultants, you know, and here's the cost to do that. And it's that, and dialogue with the public to really do the cost benefit, and to start, I don't want to call it an education process, but a much larger, broader outreach process to the community to say, hey, here's where we've come, here's how long it's taken to get here, and the public involvement it's taken, and here's where we want to figure out how, where do we want to go, and how do we want to get there, and what kind of buy-in do we need? So there's a bigger city, a bigger public process that happens kind of as the next phase once we know what's feasible. We don't want to put a project out there that is impossible to build.
Let's stop for just a second. First, we have a plan. Randall, you know, Crandall Randall. Mm-hmm. We now have KAI, which is providing, you know, some additional momentum and some timeline issues, which we apparently found the funding to do this. That wasn't necessarily anticipated at the time we put this together. A lot of what's in here is tied to this charrette that we're going to have, you know, visibility, get some momentum. So we've got a lot of integration that's taking place. So with that in mind, I want to have John talk a little bit about the urban renewal part, and then Linda talk, and then maybe we'll have some time for some additional questions once we see, you know, how all these pieces are coming together. So John?
I think just a few things. One is, We found a little money to do this project for the urban renewal, and it was then stretched beyond the budget that was there. So we're still looking for sufficient money to complete all the work that Courtney's lined out and work on some of the other things. So we're taking a very small amount of money and stretching it in a lot of different ways. So the timing of this, stretching it out a little bit, will actually help us be able to fund some of the projects. And so last spring, one of the key projects and one of the catalyst things that might help this get off the dime in downtown was to look at the plaza project and potentially secure the buildings or at least the properties on that half block that could become the focus of some other development. And so I've been talking to the property owners. And at this time, we have one property owner that we think would agree to sell his property. And I've got some administrative things I have to conduct between the city and CETA. And we think that it is possible for us to secure one of the key pieces of property on that site, maybe this January, February, right in that, if everything works well. Can't guarantee anything, both on the public side or the private side at this point, but that seems to be a possibility. We've gone through the environmental analysis on all three. They look reason that there's nothing to raise flags on it, so there's not likely to be major issues that we can now tell about. The appraisals seem to be about in the right, at the right level for at least the sale on this property. Anything beyond that, I can't say anything more about at this time. So we're hoping to reach agreement and being able to take the three pennies and somehow, you know, make it several hundred thousand dollars. But it's something we're working on right now. So that's one piece. Second one is we just got the property tax information in to the city on property taxes generally in the city, and it's gone up a little bit more than we anticipated. We anticipated no growth in property tax value, and I think it went up about 2%. Downtown and Glenwood are two urban renewal districts, and they're essentially flat. There's no change. And so one concern that we have in Glenwood, that doesn't affect downtown directly, but in Glenwood there was a large property that was off the tax rolls for a number of years, the France Bakery, U.S. Bakery. That's supposed to be on the tax, on the tax rolls, and we haven't seen a bump in the last several years, so we're just wondering why. Maybe it's been included, and we're just overlooking it because something else decreased. So we're checking that. But we don't see a lot more coming in than downtown. So the reason why it does have some effect is that if we can pay the projects that we have going with the cash flow that we have, that's fine. But the city's also set aside $1.5 million total for the two urban renewal agencies, two urban renewal areas to borrow against. And so really what we're doing is borrowing against both plans are borrowing against the same $1.5 million. So as I have property I've tied up in Glenwood, I'm trying to sell, I can't buy something somewhere else if I don't have that property and that value freed up to do something in the downtown. So we're kind of, you know, you have a fixed amount, you're sort of moving the pieces around, the puzzle pieces that Courtney talked about earlier. I have the funding one that works the same way.
Where'd the $1.5 million come from?
Some years back, we purchased a piece of property up in the Gateway area for $1,000 an acre. And over a period of about 10 years, we converted that property to much more valuable property, and it was going to be the site of our sports center. And then the city council was unwilling to give up some of the property, so we put together a five-party deal with Willamette Lane and others to trade the location of the sports center from Gateway to Mid-Springfield. And so we have a sports center in Mid-Springfield plus soccer fields. And that's doing quite well, much better than it was for a while. And then we had some property freed up that was sold, and we said if we sell this to you and we raise the zoning on this property and we're successful in doing this switch of not only the project but also the zoning change, you'll pay us, an additional $2.25 million. And they said, fine, you raise the value, we'll pay you the money. We raised the value, they paid us the money. We spent some of it on some other projects, but that $1.5 million was from that project. Thanks. So the Sports Center really did an awful lot of things at one point. So.
Okay, Linda, do you want to put one more?
And could I just do one other update? I just mentioned this to John a few minutes before this started, so I just want to let you know we had a meeting today with Bobby Lee. He used to be a City of Eugene counselor and then worked for Hynix for a while, was up in Portland. Now he's working for the governor's office. And he's in the South Valley Regional Solutions Center, which has got a new set of offices over at the University of Oregon. And so they have physical presence of someone representing 9 or 10 state agencies. They met with us today, and we talked about, we raised the issue of high-speed rail. Mayor Piercy started working on that committee last week. They've got $200,000 to look at two potential rights-of-way for high-speed rail. The committee started the meeting. Hillary Wiley, who had been on the LTD board for many years, is on our city council. She's also on that committee. So we're well-represented in the southern part of the valley. And Bobby Lee said, you know, you really need to give as much support as you can to that group for their interest in that. And I related to them at the time that we have a potential site for high-speed rail. He says, that may be the case, but we have to get the right-of-way set first. If we do that, then we can start working on where the actual terminus is. And Carmen Four was also, who works in DeFazio's office, was also in the meeting, as well as the Community Solutions team. There were about eight of them there at the time. And so there's a good understanding that we're quite interested in that high-speed rail connection in the downtown. And so we're glad to add our weight to the wheel. Maybe we can get it rolling and something will actually happen. So
and it's going to be good. A priority of that group, is what he told us, to make the corridor happen.
Right. Yeah.
To assist in that. So.
Right. So they're either looking at the old Oregon Electric Railroad right-of-way, which is on the western side of the valley, or maybe the center of I-5. That has some turning and elevation issues as a potential route. And just as another add-on, one of the things that Courtney mentioned in her presentation was the SDCs as being fairly high in the downtown. So there's a former planner, not with the city, but with a private agency, Tim Schinnebarger, and he has been working on looking at the Crandall Rambler program for block by block that has the red pieces on it. That's where the ground floor retail is, and looking at those blocks and looking at what potential SDCs would be necessary to establish those blocks at the height that Crandall Rambler has put in there, and looking at what the actual SDCs might be for those blocks. I'll call them estimates. And then how much might be responsible for an urban renewal program that could fund those. And Joe Piscinelli would like to have us start working on that program. So, again, with the funding, it may not be something we put in place immediately. And there may be some other programs that are smaller that might go in place sooner. But at least it's moving ahead. So lots of things going on.
I'd like a little bit of a reflection on you, because there has been some talk about the possibility that the bus station, the Greyhound bus station in Eugene, is a poor example for tourists and travelers to arrive at, and the location of one down here close to the high-speed rail and the LTD and all of this, and the ease to get off of I-5 to that and back, the ease of people to access that site for picking up passengers or delivering packages, all of those things. I'd like to see some thought of that being on the table too, because I think that could precede the high-speed rail, and it would certainly be a major component to convincing the location of high-speed rail for Springfield. So I'll just
okay.
Stop with that.
So two things. We've got a couple of ideas for Booth Kelly. I think this is one that we should add. And when they have the first, I think, midterm review coming up in a few weeks, I'll get a chance to provide some of that feedback to the students as to what they might be including on that at the early session. So thank you.
Thanks, Chairman. Linda?
Great. As you recall, in the downtown plan implementation strategy, one of the items for the first 120 days was to initiate planning and zoning amendments to support the plan. So I just want to let you know we are working on that now. As of the last couple weeks, I actually have time myself to be working on that project. So we are doing an analysis of what all the existing planning and zoning applies to all the lots. We now have a database of every parcel that is affected by the proposed plan that you recommended, which is on the wall over there, on the first thing on the wall. And I'm going to be preparing all the, you know, bureaucratic stuff that has to happen to make that a reality. So we have downtown refinement plan, which is our policy document. So a lot of the policies about the parking plan and all of that that you're concerned about the parking committee and all of that, that will be converted into policies in this plan. And then the Springfield Development Code is where all the regulations that affect anybody that wants to develop in our downtown, assuming that a development rises to the level of this code kicking in. And so right now, the code for that is the mixed use commercial standards. They're actually pretty good standards, and we're getting, we think, some pretty nice buildings constructed under those existing standards. So we will be doing an analysis of the code to see which pieces of that code need to be revised to be more consistent with the plan that you all have been involved with. And so one of the reasons I would like this committee to meet in January is I would like to bring back to you some draft recommendations for your review on that, because I think I'll have something concrete by then. So anyway, that's what's going on. So there are several hundred parcels that would be affected by the change, so you can imagine this is going to be going out into the world of those people's mailbox of, you know, there may be a change for you, and let's get you involved so that we can, you know, create win-win solutions for people. I don't see any radical changes in this plan other than there are, I think, about 15 or 20 parcels that are not currently in the downtown refinement plan that were shown in the Crandall plan as essential for downtown. One of them is that piece to the north, that red piece to the north that they were showing as parking, a potential parking facility. That one, I think, might be a challenge.
That's a sub-block.
I think that was the sub-block, yeah. And then it borders on the Washburn Historic District. So that's another thing. So some of the fundamental concepts that will need to be addressed, I think, are going to be the interface with the Washburn neighborhood along the northern edge of the plan to make sure that we get some additional design standards in place there that will, you know, address the fact that we have this amazing, wonderful residential neighborhood right next to our downtown. Some of the other things are if we're going to require retail uses on the ground floor in those red block areas, that is going to be a change to the code because right now mixed-use commercial allows just about any commercial use in there, and it also it doesn't require that it has to be a retail use. So part of the objective that I have for this work is that we have a user-friendly document at the end of the day instead of our existing code, which is really pretty convoluted and bureaucratic, and it refers to all these other sections in the code, and it's difficult to navigate your way through. So I'm very hopeful that we are going to come up with something that's more concise. Right now we have lists of permitted uses and prohibited uses in the zone that are lengthy and detailed. I think we might be able to consolidate those. The Glenwood planning that we've been doing for the last 2 years has really led the way on a lot of the concepts that I think we're going to want to see incorporated into the downtown plan in terms of the structure of the plan and the way we diagram things. Another thing that's to be considered is right now the Booth Kelly area has its own zoning district called the Booth Kelly Plan District that's in our code as a separate chapter. And my recommendation at this time is to move that into the downtown chapter and have it be a sub-district. So again, these are just kind of mechanics, code mechanics kinds of things. But in terms of significant issues, I think those are going to be, you know, the neighborhood interface and new restrictions being put on some uses.
Well, the zoning issues are going to be significant. And also the SDC charges. Are an issue because even though we have reduced system development charges by 50%, that still has caused a burden for some people that are trying to do renovations or site new businesses. There's been some discussion about maybe, because CETA is a separate entity from the city, so maybe having CETA incorporate those charges and amortizing that expense over, you know, a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So these are things that have to be done, but I just am very encouraged in terms of all the boots on the ground, so to speak, that are dealing with these things. And what I'd like to do is have Claire talk to us about the different committees that are working through MEDCO, I guess.
Well, this room is full of chairmen. Probably give you a better update, but I can, before they report out, I think I can give you just a little bit of an update from MEDCO's perspective. So I hope that some of you, if not most of you, have met Neil Obringer, who's our new permanent person for the Main Street program in downtown Springfield. He is a terrific guy, and he's been at oodles of training in the last 2 months since he started. So I'm really looking forward to him taking the lead on a lot of the organizing parts and pieces of the committee work, which will be great. I think having a dedicated staff person over time will make a really great difference. Landon was wonderful, but I think we all felt the gap when he left. Mm-hmm. Even though we had a hire nearly immediately, it's still, you know, the learning curve, and the relationship building and all of that is so essential to the downtown work. So I'm excited to have Neil on board. The other thing that I think is important is that we're having a workshop with Council on the 21st to talk about some Medco projects in general, but certainly the Main Street program in particular. So I think that from NEDCO's perspective, we're really interested in seeing where the council stands in terms of real serious figurative and literal buy-in on the work that we're doing, and whether or not we can have the conversation about how to make this position maybe not all of NEDCO's responsibility. It's really hard to go raise money for this position without the city having an investment, if you will, in the project, and it's time to have that conversation. So I'm really looking forward to sharing sort of the projects, the potential, some of the new things that are coming up, and just seeing where we stand, I think.
So this is Monday, November 21st, is the workshop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Council work session.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an important meeting, I think, and everybody seems very positive, I think, in general. We're a new Main Street program, so we're having fits and starts. But you got to do it. And as we met today in Dan's office with the organizational committee, the idea that you just keep going at it. And if the first time doesn't catch, then you go to the next time until it catches, you know. And I think the design charrette is just a wonderful outcome of the kind of focused work that Main Street committees can do. So I'm really happy about that one. But you guys, I think, maybe have more updates on what you're doing.
Do we have some people that are representing some of these committees that want to share, Karen?
Well, one of the things that came out of Tuesday's design committee meeting, we are wanting to draft a letter to council about just letting them know. But it sounds like, I don't know if that's going to be redundant, I didn't know about the work session, but we want to just put some key points in a letter, and Ted and Denise and myself and possibly Neil, I already started like a little bit of a draft, that things that we just want the council to know that we're trying to, I wish I had that with me right now, but well, one of the items was having to do with licensing or business registry, because so many businesses get in under the radar because mm-hmm. they're not required to register, and then the city doesn't find out about any possible violations, code violations, or zoning violations until after the fact, and that happens kind of frequently, I think. And so that was at the top of my list. And I think that because there's so many newer members of council that aren't familiar with the Main Street program, because they've been made familiar in some ways, but there's quite a few of them that just really don't know what it is that's going on. And it would be really cool, I don't know, have they been invited to the charrette? Does anybody know?
They were invited. They were, at least I instructed them how to do it.
To
students, to bring the flyers and how to get in everybody's boxes. And,
oh, okay.
So
we're trying to get, we're doing it via email right now, just everybody kind of putting some points together, and then we just want to get this letter out. We don't want to make it fancy, but just get it out to council so they're aware of what's going on. So that was one of the things that came out of it, and we went over Linda's, we discussed Linda's presentation that she had given at the past meeting, showing us, it was really great. I mean, lots of different ideas and photos from other downtowns. And then there are several of us going to, on that field trip, to see Albany, Corvallis, and McMinnville, right? Monday. And so Denise is going, and Claire, and I'm joining in, and you guys are looking at the gap analysis. That's what
JT and Tom.
I looked at how gap analysis is done elsewhere. So let's take a look at that.
John and I are on he's talking the economic restructuring committee,
economic
morphing into that committee.
Right. So
and we looked at it and said, oops, we don't have $150,000 to hire someone to do this. nor the information that we need to do that kind of analysis. So we're trying to take another approach to it. We're not quite there yet.
These field trips are pretty interesting. I talked to Linda about a neighborhood in North Portland called the Kenton Historic District, North Denver Street, which is right off Interstate Avenue. There's a beautiful park there. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. But it's a main street that went through some tough times. So it's now, there's two ways. There's aggregate that's different colors. There's the bike lanes. There's the, you know, the parking has been integrated. And all of a sudden, you start seeing this new building or these businesses being sited there. It's within a block of the park. So there's some really interesting, you know, ideas that we can draw from. So if you anybody individually has ideas, there's one that was just sent to me and others by Bill Grile. Sandy is got a big you know, study going on. Where actually, not a study at this point. It's the before and after.
Where are they? Where's Sandy?
Sandy is on your way up to Mount Hood.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Troutdale, Sandy, you know, that area. Any, Dan, do you have anything relative to what's been going on as far as the committee work and things that you've been involved in, or just been things that you've been listening to?
Yeah, I have to go after this. I just wanted to.
We're gonna wrap up at quarter after. We're gonna leave it at quarter.
Okay.
After. Okay.
Well, as Claire kind of said, what we're doing, the organization committee had a beginning and an end, and a beginning and an end, so they can't kill it, I guess, so they have to do it. But so I
mean,
yeah, I don't really have much more to say about the committee, except that it's the committee that's expected to do some very specific things, including raising money and gathering volunteers, but also to help support what the other committees are doing and thanking the work of the other committees. So thank you. Committees. I'm just publicly doing my job here. But we do need to be invigorated with folks that want to get down in the pits a little bit and ask for banks and others to support us. And you will all be getting a pledge card very, very soon. That's all I have to say about that.
So real quickly, the Economic Restructuring Committee, which I chair and John is city staff on as well, is putting together recruitment packages as well as informational packages for pre-existing businesses or businesses that might skirt in without sort of ARC recruitment, which will happen. Having identified incentives, programs to get into, information, contacts, and all of those. We also have a subgroup doing the gap analysis background, which this is John's report to me that it may not work out. And we're also now taking on a conversation about restaurants and marketing to certain target groups and maybe how to streamline that. That was kind of a recent task that came up within the last 2 weeks. So we're pretty excited about that. And then there's another spinoff that's occurred from sort of Karen and then some of the other committees, which is talking about facade improvements. And so without my committee chair hat on and my staff hat back on, John and I have been talking about ideas that Karen's brought up, which is sort of that match program where it's an urban renewal program that funds a certain number of facade improvements as long as we sort of ensure that those improvements are meeting standards outlined by Main Street committees and has some investment from the property owner.
You know, just think about it, where we started with Crandall Arambula. Another plan. We were hoping that this plan would be more than just, you know, what we've saw in the past, a plan that just goes nowhere. So now we have NEDCO making a huge statement in terms of momentum, getting the church and that
Sprout
project going. We have KAI involved in, you know, the accessibility, the, you know, the traffic issues, circulation issues. We have the parking. I mean, the signs are already made, ready to, you know, go up. We've got the University of Oregon students involved. I mean, there's significant things that have taken place in a fairly short, you know, time frame We've got timelines, as Courtney has addressed, and she is, and others are trying to be very specific to make sure that there's accountability established. So I think we are way ahead of the curve on this. The art walk, I mean, there's just a number of things that, you know, kind of come together. There's a lot of buzz and a lot of momentum. So this committee is, I'm really proud of what we've been able to, I mean, we're just a committee. I mean, there's a lot of people out here doing the legwork, but I just think we should all be very proud and tell people how much we support what they're, you know, doing, because this is, we're coming up with outcomes, and that's what we wanted to do in the first place. Shannon?
I know zero about Springfield City Club, but is there anything with them working with the downtown or thinking about downtown stuff?
I think you can talk to Denise about that.
She left,
but I think that if there's presentations...
There's other of us who are on the City Club executive board that... what we're looking at as City Club is to have conversations. There may be some in favor of what we're doing in downtown or not in favor of what we're doing downtown, but also what we're doing in the downtown. And so that's a piece that the City Club, I think, would be interested in. And I think our program chair, is your program chair?
Yes, I am.
How far out do we have programs on the downtown? Do we have anything on the downtown schedule?
Denise just said tonight, put it on the calendar, okay? So it'll probably be at the end of January.
Yeah. So we've got things programmed out for months, so this is probably one that would be inserted. And there's a number of ways of doing that.
It would be really cool to have, John, if, you know, since you're chair of this group, and just to say, hey, this is how the money was spent. I mean, it's a report card, and, you know, because a lot of people are asking. I mean, I've heard that a lot just from, well, you know, you did all the study, what's come of it, and you just very simply summed it up, and that would be an awesome topic for City Club.
Well, the other interesting thing to me is the amount of really good publicity we've gotten. I mean, Karen's been in the Register Guard. I mean, we've had a lot of, you know, really positive, you know, media spin on all of this. Jim?
Karen, I hope you are very close attention. I know you want to do this dialogue, but that's the kind of stuff that needs to go to the City Council, because that's right target. That's dead center bullseye. Anyhow, with the flat income, property taxes are increasing as envisioned, and so it's pretty stagnant at the present time, which really ties your hands behind your back. But there are a lot of very meaningful attempts at getting feet on the ground, short of major construction and seeing, you know, withdraw from this kind of new business or that kind of new business. There's other things, you know. The thing is that I remember Springfield when it was much smaller, and there was a lot of civic pride in downtown, and you could rebuild city pride and get feet on the ground with inexpensive activities that are going on. The art walk is a good example of the spirit that's there, the bands and the dances and all of these things that go on are fun. If you make downtown a destination for fun and you work from that premise in the near future, in the near term, people are going to be more apt to support you. Everybody wants to jump on a bandwagon that's exciting and fun and forward moving. So, you know, it's kind of putting the horses in front of the thing.
Well, I mean, we've got, you know, I think it's just seeping out, you know, the seams as far as, you know, pride right now. And there's all kinds of additional opportunities. We want to get, you know, the bicyclists over here, and we want to, I mean, I know that Cascade Manor has brought a big van over to go to the, whether the Washburn or not. But so they're just, if you have ideas, you know, make sure those ideas are shared. And
What I'd like you to do, Linda, is maybe come up with some dates rather than try to figure it out right now, because we may not have, you know, the information we need. Yeah.
Just a couple comments. First of all, you know, I share the chair's enthusiasm for where we are from where we were, and you go further back and see even more progress. So it's really good. I think we've got a lot of momentum, and I think there's a lot of people working on it. I just have a couple of concerns, and they're probably not major concerns, but I don't know if anyone feels this way. But when we are looking at the original study that was not only supported by us but adopted by the city council, I think it's really a careful line that we have to walk about. I kind of share Ted's gone, but some concerns about that. I think when we look at those major things, like the circulation one that Courtney was, I think all the businesses should be contacted in downtown, but I think you're going to get a different, it's for those people, but it's also for the people that aren't downtown right now, and I think I'm hoping that when we reach out to that big wide community, not just Springfield either, that we get the answers about what kind, do you want a walkable downtown and all this kind of stuff? And then, because I heard that we were going to kind of narrow down the options when you go to the wider community, I don't know if that's really going to serve as well. I think I would like the consultant's vision to always be a part of it. You know, not, well, we kind of looked at that, we don't think it's feasible, so we put that on the shelf. Here's another iteration of it, so I'd be careful about that. The second thing is the zoning and the codes and everything, and I think it's great to have a plan and update that and have an aspirational, use that word, kind of thing. But we've been very concerned about the Glenwood one and taking a look at it, and hopefully have had an impact on trying to make sure that all of these are incentives to develop and not decentives. Disincentives, and it's a really close thing. You want a beautiful building, and you mentioned we're putting up some really good buildings because of this plan, and I'm not really sure which ones those are, but obviously the big project that was brought up, it isn't here yet in Glenwood or downtown. So to me, I'd write toward that project, because that's going to change downtown. And frankly, just a little thing about the committee, we were asked by the consultants, and I think really given direction by the council, to be sort of the public watchdogs over the plan. And we aren't going to be able to do that if we meet twice a year. Mm-hmm. So I have a concern that, and I really applaud all of the work that's going on, but we're really going to be in a mode of receiving reports instead of having an input that means that's meaningful, that staff can say, you guys have been along the whole way. Before we embark on this, what do you think of this? And, you know, so I'm just a little bit concerned that, you know, our last meeting was May, so it wasn't 6 months, so I exaggerate a lot. But maybe there's a consensus that our best use would be to be plugged in at least every couple of months. And in order to do that, I think that the committee would have to agree that we would like to meet every couple of months, if not on an occasion when, you know, Courtney would say, we want the committee to look at this. We want to hear from you before we do this. And I'd be totally committed to meeting when the staff said it's critical to get these people back together.
So January is one of the points that Linda was talking about.
And I think, well, let's do this. Let's further discuss this once we come up with a date in January and look ahead, because many of us have calendars that are, you know, way out in the future because of other commitments. And so it's not that I disagree. It's just that I want to make sure that we don't do it on an ad hoc basis. I don't want to have a meeting just to have a meeting.
No.
But I want it to be substantive. But I agree, you know, with kind of things funneling as they have been funneled, it may be appropriate to meet more often.
And it's just, you know, we all are touch points for folks who are interested in downtown. So I feel personally that I've learned a few things here tonight that I didn't know, that I might have given different answers to people a week ago. So sometimes it's not, maybe it doesn't seem meaningful, you know, but all of a sudden Shannon says, that's important for me to know, because people are talking. So I just kind of a comment. I think there's so much going on, and you heard just a little bit about Main Street. Obviously, a lot more going on there. So as we ramp up activities, maybe we have to ramp up our proactiveness.
Great. Okay, thank you for attending tonight. Appreciate the comments. Linda, quickly.
Can I just ask, is Thursday night still our preferred meeting night? Because if it is, I'd like to propose January 12th or 19th for consideration. And I'm going to have a lot of work for you to review. So I may be asking you to meet every month. And there may be even to meet more than that.
Can you send out an email so that we can respond to you individually?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll retail it for
you. Okay.
The meeting the other night for your 20-year plan.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'll tell you, that was the best all-around meeting. You had maybe 30 to 40 people there, and a great many, the vast, way over half had public input, and it wasn't reserved. It was really like.
Yeah, it was a good process.
Okay, thank you guys.
Came away with a lot more than what I went in.
Thank you.
Good.
Good things.
Just a couple of
We are almost halfway through the time, and that I think people are going to be
interested.
Yeah,
I just
see
my Oh, no. Well, it's really odd.
Take care.
So, same in downtown, and I think you've asked the voters to give you permission.